The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, we're now finding out more about the shooter who will remain nameless on this program. We're not going to give him any fame. But he is now being described as vocally anti-Christian. Here's what we know about him. 26-year-old, he murdered 26 people during a worship service on Sunday at the First Baptist Church in a little teeny town called Sutherland Springs here in Texas. He graduated from New Braunfels High School in 2009. He joined the Air Force a year later. He worked as a logistical readiness airman at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. He then married a woman named Tessa, had an infant stepson. In 2012, he assaulted his wife and stepson, fracturing the boy's skull. Now, according to the Air Force, the chief prosecutors, Kelly pled to intentionally fracturing the child's skull. He was court-martialed for the assault and spent a year in military prison. His wife filed for divorce in October of 2012. After his prison term, he was discharged from the Air Force for bad conduct. In April 2014, he married Danielle Lee Shields. They moved to Colorado Springs. They lived in an RV park. While he was there, he was charged again, this time with a misdemeanor, animal cruelty. But the case was dismissed. In recent years, he lived with Danielle and their two-year-old son in a barn behind his parents' house in their large property in Texas. However, by 2017, he was estranged from Danielle. In June, he was hired to work as an unarmed night security guard at a water park. He was fired after 5.5 weeks. Danielle sometimes attended First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs with her parents. They weren't there Sunday when Kelly attacked. Yesterday, officials say they were investigating the threatening texts that Kelly had sent to his mother-in-law. They haven't released any of the details yet, but it appears that the church shooting was somehow connected to a domestic dispute and his hatred for Christians. Several people who knew Kelly, the shooter from high school, unfriended him on Facebook. They said that he had grown dark, and he had liked several atheist groups on his Facebook page. One Facebook friend wrote that he was always talking about how people believe in God and they were stupid, and he was trying to preach his atheism. One former friend posted on Facebook Sunday night, "Over the years, we all saw him change into something that he wasn't. I don't think I've ever read this ever before. In all of the tragedies that I have covered in 40 years of broadcast, I don't think I have ever read these words from someone who knew the killer." Quote, "To be completely honest, I'm not really surprised this happened. I don't think anybody who knew him was really surprised."
It's Tuesday, November 7th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to have a talk with you. I think you're different, and we look at things differently. I want to give you a recap of what we've experienced here in the last few weeks. First, let me tell you that Rand Paul, his injuries are more severe than originally thought. He has 5 broken ribs. He has a bruised lung, contusions, bruises. Apparently, he has 3 teeth that were knocked out. This story has gone from he had the wind knocked out of him to something really serious. We know who the perpetrator was. It was his neighbor. And we know that his neighbor is now trying to make this about grass clippings. I find that hard to believe. The reason why he is trying to make this about grass clippings is because if it was politically motivated, it's a federal offense. And it, to me, looks like it was politically motivated. Here is a guy. Imagine if somebody who was listening to this program or listened to Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or any of us went and attacked Bernie Sanders. The media would be all over it. And they would be calling for us to be shut down. Here's a guy who was a follower of Occupy Democrats. And he said that Republicans are the most evil in the world today and have to be stopped. That's who attacked a U.S. senator. The day after that, we had a guy who hates Christians kill 26 people in a church. Now imagine if a Christian went and shot up a bunch of atheists. It wouldn't matter if it was domestic dispute that was going on. Everyone would be going crazy. I'm not going where you think I'm going, by the way. This isn't a rant about the media. So we had an atheist go kill a bunch of people in church. We had an Occupy Democrat go in and beat Rand Paul, a sitting U.S. senator, almost ignored. Before that, we had a guy who wanted to fly his ISIS flag, but was afraid he would have been pulled over before he could get away with what he was going to do. Run over a bunch of children. He wanted to kill children. And he did it in the name of Allah. Before that was Las Vegas. What was this guy's motive? Police now say that he liked being the high roller, that he really liked being the guy who walked in the casino. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, the big high roller is here. He liked being the big man. They now say that his motive was just to be the best killer, the biggest mass murderer in American history. He was looking for fame. He had been bitten by, I don't know what. What is this bug that is going around? This fame bug, the YouTube bug, the Facebook bug, just the fame bug. What is it? Before that, we had another Democrat, another follower of the extreme left, tried to shoot all the Republican members of Congress and the Senate. Had them pinned down for a while. Only by the grace of God was nobody killed. And in between those, we just had a guy jump the fence at the White House. He tried to go in and kill all of the white cops. That was his stated goal on Facebook. I'm going to the White House to kill all of the white cops. Also this weekend, we had Antifa. Antifa popped up all over the country. What are they doing? By any means necessary, they will shut down anyone that they disagree with. And let's not forget that we also have Nazis. And what's the problem with Nazis? Well, They have a point of view, and if you don't agree, they'll kill you. Does anybody see what the real problem is? There's only one that doesn't fit this pattern, and that's the fame bug. And quite honestly, that one scares me the most. But what do the others have in common? The others, no matter which side, they believe they are so right that they have a right to kill everyone who disagrees with them. We better have a real conversation in this country. We better have it soon. It's a conversation that we started back in Birmingham. That all lives matter. That your life matters. And that I say to people who disagree with me, who may hate my guts. I understand that. I'm sorry for that. I'd like to find a way to come together. But I am who I am. I believe what I do. If you have a good argument, I will listen to you. But you are not my enemy. Your life matters. And so does mine. And so does everybody around. We have decided for the first time in American history. No, perhaps the second time, the Civil War. We have decided that anyone who disagrees with you is an enemy, and you have a right to kill them. They don't have a reason to live. In the Civil War, there were only two sides. Those who wanted slavery, and those who didn't. Those who wanted slavery, not all of them, thought that they were fighting for slavery because the people up at top were masters at the puppeteering. They were told that they were not fighting for the economic security of slavery. They were fighting for states' rights. They were lied to. But those were really the only, that was the only argument here. Right now, we're arguing over everything. And even when we're not arguing, there's somebody else that just wants to be famous. How did this happen to us? It's really not that hard. This happened to us because we didn't think it could. And we got lazy, and we didn't pay attention. And we failed to teach. We failed to recognize what we were being taught. We accepted the slow slide into mediocrity. And we have lost our unum. E pluribus unum. From many, one. What is it that is our one? What is it that I could say to the rest of the world? America holds these truths to be self-evident. What are they? Sincerely, that all of us could agree on. It's certainly not the Bill of Rights anymore. It's not life. It's not liberty. What is it? Those are just words that have been so overused, they mean nothing. We have better find our unum, or we don't make it much longer. Let us be the ones to go out and find the self-evident truths and come together with those we don't agree on everything with. But we have a few self-evident truths that will bind us together as one. I have to tell you, the times have truly changed. And now with the credit bureaus being breached, some people are saying, you know, what do? Do I freeze my credit, et cetera, et cetera? No. Here's the problem. Once your identity is out there, it's out there. And I think it was the head of Google that told us years ago that, you know, by the time you reach 25, everybody's going to have to change their identity because everything will be out there and you won't have any identity. You'll have to recreate a new one. This type of personal information can be used to commit crimes in your name and even steal from your 401k. And our kids are really a big target because they don't usually go in and grab their identity until they get their first job. And then when they do, a lot of times they've been destroyed already. Now's the time to get protection. Sign up for LifeLock today. They use proprietary technology to help detect a wide range of identity theft. And if there is a problem, an identity restoration specialist here in the U.S. is going to work to fix it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft. Nobody can monitor all transactions at all businesses, but they will help you see more threats to your identity than anyone else. They're the best in the business. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK, 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code BECK, 1-800-LIFELOCK, and you'll save 10% on your LifeLock membership. Or you can go to the website at LifeLock.com. Use the promo code BECK. That's LifeLock.com, promo code BECK.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
You know where I'm finding hope lately is the problem isn't that hard to solve, and it doesn't require a pact. It doesn't require a 501c3 status. It doesn't require anything. It requires all of us just to do what we're supposed to do and just lead as people of light. That's it. You don't beat evil with more evil. You will never out-yell them. You'll never out-scream them. You'll never out-reason them. You're just going to have to love them. And the only way that this works, because we are fighting evil. Is there any doubt in your mind that we're fighting evil right now? Because there's no doubt in my mind when somebody says, I've got to kill all of the white police officers. What's the difference between that and I have to kill all of the black police officers? None. And we have people saying that. I have to kill all the fascists, or I have to kill all the communists, or I have to kill all the whites, or I have to kill all the blacks, or I have to kill all the Jews. I have to kill all the Republicans. I have to kill all of the Democrats. They all have one thing in common. They want to kill people. It's evil. And the only thing that conquers evil is love. The only thing that dispels darkness is light. And The darkness doesn't understand the light. It cannot defeat it because it doesn't even understand it. And I find that a remarkable scripture, that the darkness understandeth it not. And I find it remarkable because of this. How many people do we know in our life that claim to be a part of the light, but they don't understand the power of goodness and love? They are saying it's not enough.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So we have set up a fund for this town, these amazing people. I mean, this town has really come together and is yet another example of the good people of Texas and how good people are supposed to behave. All the way down from the guy who we have some amazing audio from, Steven Crowder, who talked to the guy who came out of his house, an NRA instructor. I thought the NRA, they were nothing but terrorists. An NRA instructor came out and brought his gun, and he's the guy who stopped the shooting. The guy who he got into the truck, he didn't even know who he was. They got into a truck and they pursued him while they were waiting for the police and radioing the police and telling the police where to go. It's quite a remarkable town. Paul Bufford, he is the pastor of River Oaks Church, which is, I think, kind of the sister church. Do I have that right, Paul? You're kind of the sister church of this church?
Well, we're a neighbor church.
Okay.
Pretty much. And it's Buford.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're 2 miles down the road. We just, you know, we're the family of God. So we work together jointly on a lot of things. Our families are interconnected. People in my church have families that are in that church. Some of the people that were in my church on Sunday morning came to be with their family members that morning instead of going to that church that 2 days ago. So, yes, this is a very close, very small community. We're only talking hundreds of people that are here.
So, Paul, how is the community? How's the community dealing with this? I mean, 10% of the population was involved.
Well, you know, we're dealing with it through the strength of the Lord through our faith in God. And we're dealing with it through the outpouring of love that we're seeing from the rest of our community, from the state of Texas, and even from America. I sent a picture this morning from a friend in Washington, D.C., of the Washington Monument with the ring of flags being flown at half-mast, ordered by President Trump in honor of the victims that are here. So we know that America and even the world, I'm getting messages from all over the world, Brazil and different places, the United Kingdom, showing support and love and asking if there's anything that they can do for us. So that's the only thing that can hold you up in this time. I was asked yesterday by one of the reporters if it doesn't something like this shake your feet or shake your faith, and I'm like, no, it strengthens my faith when we see everyone in the body of Christ pull together and love one another, and we know in the strength of the Lord that our friends that we'll never see again here or in heaven with their Lord and Savior, we'll see them again there someday.
Paul, how do you explain to to people that say, you know, if there is a God. I mean, these people were good people. They were all in the church praying. And, you know, if there is a God, how could he let that happen?
Well, I try to use the example. Well, first off, let me say that we believe that we're and truly believe that we're made in the image of God. And in that, we've been given attributes that are of God. And I think one of the greatest attributes is humans being made in the image of God, that we've been given this choice. He gave us the ability to make and the means to make choices, and desires us to look to him and make good choices. God always has choices in front of him, but he would never make a wrong choice. So in saying that, we're here on this earth, and we do things and we live our lives. That's what he put us here, gave us dominion over this world to subdue it and overcome it. And then we do things that are against what he wants, and we want to blame him for it. I mean, I hate to use this kind of analogy, but I say, you know, if you step off the curb in front of a truck or something, and you get hit, we can't blame God. If someone bad does something, we can't blame God. We blame what's going on in that other person's heart. They're turning away from God to do evil instead of doing good.
How about blaming the gun? There's a lot of people in America that want to blame the gun.
Well, we have so many things now that we're going to blame. I mean, do we blame the rock that's used? Do we blame a hammer that's used, or a car that's used, or we have so much blame that we want to, in finger point, we want to find something. We want to find something else other than ourselves to point to blame for these tragedies. This is heart issues. This is a spiritual battle that's going on here, you know, and evil will not prevail. Evil did not prevail the other day, Glenn. It didn't win anything yesterday, because the love now is overpowering anything that happened. So we don't blame the gun. We don't blame the instrument that is used in doing these type of things. We blame the hearts of man for looking to themselves and looking to do evil rather than looking to do good and looking to God.
Are you familiar with the Holcomb family? Do you know them?
Yes, I knew them very well. That's such a tragedy for this community, because they were such upstanding people here. They were so loved. I was telling someone yesterday, I said, Brian Holcomb, I never saw anything but a smile and laughter come out of his face. He was a guy who played the ukulele and at different places. And Carla, his wife, was just a joy. I mean, she's so funny and outgoing, and they were so strong in their faith. And Crystal, John Holcomb's wife, she was such a beautiful woman and already had some tragedy in her life previously before all of this. And her kids were so wonderful. And then poor John now is left with this devastation and two children to take care of. So it's just a tragedy. And they were all such beautiful people. John is the most quietest, just nicest guy to do anything in the world for anybody.
So if people don't know, Brian was the guest preacher, and yes, he was killed. His wife was killed. Their son was killed. Their pregnant daughter-in-law and the baby, Crystal, were killed. Four of their grandchildren were killed. And only three remain of this family, right?
Right. And Crystal was pregnant. So, I heard the other day that they're determining and going to make that another victim, the baby that she was carrying.
How can we help?
Well, I think the help that we need right now, and they say, will really be prayers help. Absolutely, they do. For us to know that the world and the United States and the body of Christ is praying for us, that means everything to us. I mean, I don't know where we're getting the strength from to just keep going. I do know, but I mean, it's just, we just keep going. I mean, I don't get very much sleep. I don't get very good sleep. And yet I wake up and I feel fresh and ready to go. And I go throughout the day. I'm 5 weeks out of back surgery. I'm not supposed to be doing all of this. And yet, you know, supernaturally, my back may hurt just a little bit, but I just keep going and going and going. So continue with the prayers. We have an outpouring of financial help being offered, and we're, I mean, to the point where we have so many other things going on, we're trying to establish how all of that can be done so that people know that that money will get to the family and the church. And we're working on that. This week is so much concentrated on trying to help the families, help the wounded. We still have so many injured. We talk about those that have died, but we still have so many that have been injured that are in hospitals. Some that may never walk again, and with multiple gunshot wounds. And those families are still up there at those hospitals. So it's important for us to know that y'all are still praying for us. And this week we're having to deal with trying to make all the arrangements for the funerals, trying to get any assistance that the families need. In the weeks to come, that's when we're really going to need people, you know, rather than just move on to something else, to come back and say, okay, now that things have settled down just a little bit here, what is it that we need from this point to go forward, you know?
Pastor, thank you so much. We are praying for you. God bless, and we'll talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Glenn, and thank you, America.
So that was Pastor Paul Buford from a church right down the street in the community where all of this happened. You know, there's so many people saying, well, prayers aren't enough. I assume all those people are putting their money where their mouth is and trying to help. Mercury1.org is a great place to go for that. Mercury1.org, there's a place right on the front where you can see support the church. And, you know, these people need your prayers first, but they need support in the community as well to get through all of this and all the expenses associated with it. So please
help
out.
And being able to take care of the children and everything else, the hospital bills alone. You can donate to mercury1.org. We've been working with Liberty Safe for over 7 years, and they not only make great safes, but they are now making them really easy to own one. At libertysafe.com, you can get a great price and receive 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month. $20 a month. There is nothing like owning a Liberty Safe. The peace of mind, the lifetime warranty, the in-home delivery service. It's unmatched in the industry. But to be able to have all of your guns in a place where you know nobody is getting into it, you have all of your documents where you know your house can burn down. You know, it could be sucked up in a tornado. And that thing is bolted to the foundation, and if you don't want to have it bolted to the foundation, we've seen them dropped a block away by a tornado, and they are still closed, and everything is still inside safe. Now with 12 months interest-free payments for as low as $20 a month on approved credit, every home has valuables that need protecting. Make sure yours are in a Liberty Safe. Go to libertysafe.com right now. That's the home of the best built safes on the planet. It's libertysafes.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
You know, we were just talking to the the pastor of the neighboring church here in Texas that was shot up, and we told you about the Holcomb family. I just imagine this: mom and dad, guest preacher, both of them dead. Their son killed. Their pregnant daughter-in-law killed. The baby killed. Four of their grandchildren killed. This leaves now Joe Holcomb. He's 86 years old. He now has to mourn for all of the whole family. He said, quote, "We know where they are now. All of our family members. It won't be long before we're with them." I fail to understand the people who want to take down Christianity. Anything that gives you that peace, anything that gives you the ability to not be lost in hatred and darkness, but anything that says you can lose your entire family, I don't care if it's a lie. I really don't. I mean, I've had atheist friends who have said to me, "You know, Glenn, that's, you know, you're smarter than that. How could you possibly believe in a resurrected?" Well, I do. I do. But you know what? It makes me a better man. It makes me happy. It makes me peaceful. It gives me hope. It helps me explain the world that I live in. I don't really care. I mean, if I wake up and I'm in a box and I'm like, huh, there's nothing here. I mean, you know, if I die and I never wake up, okay, well, I won't know the difference. But I knew the difference now. Now, I'm not saying this for people of faith. I'm saying this to people who don't have faith. You should, A, give it a shot. B, if you don't want to give it a shot, why would you try to stop people from finding something that gives them peace in their life? You know, I know people who do yoga and stuff. Oof. I'm going to try to shut them down.
If it was a drug that made people react like that in a matter of tragedy to see things in that sort of perspective, we'd all be prescribing it.
Yes.
Right. It's amazing that this doesn't come from a drug. It comes from real faith and something that, you know, seemingly a larger and larger portion of this country wants to stop.
You know, they'll say, well, it is like a drug. It's the opiate of the masses. Not really. Not really. It doesn't destroy the body. And you're knowingly getting into it. You, for it to work, I mean, you can't just join and then not really believe and not change your life. Real believers, there's a difference to them. They're kinder. They're more gentle. They're happier. They make it through. There's a difference. You ought to give it a try.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
War drums are beating again in the Middle East. The fighting words now coming from the Saudis the past 24 hours have been difficult to keep up with. Especially if you're here in America, because nobody is paying attention to this. And the world is changing. It began this last week. On Monday, Saudi Arabia called a missile attack by an Iranian proxy an act of war by Iran. Literally just a few hours later, the Saudis accused Lebanon of declaring war on the kingdom for supporting Hezbollah, which is an instrument of Iran. The Saudi Gulf Affairs Minister said Lebanon would be, quote, dealt with as a government declaring war on Saudi Arabia, end quote. This morning, the Saudi crown prince, who basically is a de facto king, accused Iran of direct military aggression. The Saudis have used the word war twice in 24 hours, and now the most powerful man in the country publicly points the finger at Iran. the Arab and the Persian Cold War has been going on for a very long time, but it is very rare that it is this public and they never are this direct about it. So what's going on? Well, I'm going to try to break this down at 5 o'clock because there's a lot of pieces to this, but it boils down to this. A fundamental transformation of the Middle East is underway. Saudi Arabia and Iran and even Turkey are scrambling to see who will fill the power vacuum left behind as ISIS retreats. All three of them want a caliphate. Iran has clearly been winning this. They have armed militias dominating the countries of Yemen, Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq. They are on the verge of near complete control. This is the caliphate that they have been working towards. The Saudis are finding themselves a little late to the party, and they've apparently had enough. The direct confrontation between the Saudis and Iran will affect you. It will have global consequences. I mean, I hate to even mention this, but there are so many people in America that will only pay attention to this when their gasoline is $5 a gallon. And that could happen, and it could happen quickly. But that is the least of our worries. Militaries from all over the world will get involved, which will increase the chance a mistake may happen between these two rivals. President Trump is in Asia this week. I am praying that he is directing all of his attention to the Middle East. The State Department should be in overdrive working to cool this down, because there are no winners in wars in the Middle East. I don't know if anybody has caught that. But there are no winners in the wars in the Middle East. No one will win if this war goes forward, but the war drums are beating loudly.
It's Tuesday, November 7th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We have a guest that, I don't know, a few years ago, I would imagine would had to have hated my guts, and may actually still. I'm not really sure. But he is big on TED Talks. You may have seen this. Theo E.J. Wilson. He is known as Lucifuri, as in the poetry circles. He has won all kinds of poetry slams. And he was a guy who really kind of became famous overnight. He said, I took a cell phone out and I made myself famous, talking about the things that he cared about. And he said he got up one morning and there were so many notifications on his phone. He thought he slept through, some world tragedy. And no, it was that his video had become viral and people were listening to what he said. So he said, I made more and more videos and they were more and more divisive, but he had experience. This is at the height of Black Lives Matter. And he's a survivor of police brutality himself. He lost a childhood friend that way. And so he had plenty to say. And then he realized, wait a minute, the internet can be really, really good, but it also can just divide us. And so he decided to go in and find the people that really kind of wanted him dead and wanted, that just disagreed with everything that he believed in and wanted to see, can I find the humanity? And he did. This is an amazing story. Theo, welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you very much, Glenn, for having me on, and I'm doing great.
Good. So tell me about your experience, Theo.
In what regard, sir?
Well, I mean, how you started going down the road of trying to talk to people who everybody would pretty much say are despicable.
Well, it was by accident, Max. Most savingly, I was getting trolled myself, as you mentioned. And I would like trace my trolls, and they would have these shell accounts that had nothing behind them. And I said, well, two can play that game. Now, around that time, I have a friend who worked at a marketing firm, and he started telling me about target marketing algorithms, how these target marketing algorithms would give you more of what you clicked on, and that it worked for not only products you buy, but also for the news that you consume. Mm-hmm. And a little bit into this, it just little blips started coming through to let me know that I was in my own bubble. And then I said, all right, well, if this is the case, let me see what's on the other side. And I literally, Glenn, when I tell you I didn't think that it was anything when I was doing it, I created the account. I went down the rabbit hole, and it was just informing me. I was engaging with folks as Lucius 25. And then I shut the project down thinking that it was inconsequential. A year before TED Talks hit me up and asked me to create something that had relatively little to do with this originally. So I'm as surprised as anybody else, man.
So what did you find going down the rabbit hole?
I found a lot of darkness, bro. If I could be honest with you, I am invested in the unity of humanity. And the tragedy of racism is that we are all human. The tragedy of racism is that we have ascribed far too high of consequences for the differences that we have. And I also really crunched the numbers on this and found out that Black people as a whole in this country are just woefully outnumbered. And that as much sway as we'd like to think that we have, there are forces that are literally beyond our control to the level that I do not know if we can achieve Dr. King's dream with as many people triggered into racism as I saw. So it was actually a scarring experience. As much as I would like to reach towards unity, I think that the seeds of divisiveness cannot be uprooted until they really poke their head out. And there's more coming, man. Unfortunately,
I think that's what's really interesting about your approach, though, in that you, I think a lot of us feel that way, that these divides are so wide that we're never going to be able to connect with anyone or even see the humanity on the other side. And I thought what was interesting is you really tried to investigate. You gave it an actual, you know, college try. You actually tried to see things in their points of view that you could connect with or see was that were real. Can you kind of describe what you saw there that kind of connected you a little bit to that side?
Yeah, man. And I want to be very, very clear. Because I had a human compassion for the folks that were on that side didn't mean that I have sympathy. And that has to be made clear.
Yeah, definitely. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it.
A basic human compassion is a spiritual device that lets you see the cause and effect of how someone became who they are. And that's what I found. But a sympathizer for the all right, far from it. What I discovered is that human beings can be reinforced into virtually any hateful position if there's enough of you echoing. That was the danger of the echo chamber, because there's not enough data points coming in to give you some other food for thought. And if you are in the chat group, if you are frequenting certain websites, YouTube channels, and if the internet itself is feeding you more of that and thereby giving you people more of a like-minded perspective, before you know it, you will think that this is the way that the world is. And what I saw was that, had I been born on that side of the racial divide, I'm not sure if I would escape it. And conversely, I think that what's interesting is that every member of the alt-right, had they been born Black, would be a part of Black Lives Matter because of the way that they assimilated the data. And that's what I thought was very interesting.
So, Theo, let me talk to you about something that we may strongly disagree with.
Yes, sir.
I did kind of the same thing. When there was the shooting here in Dallas, I got together with the people who were marching. And the reason why is because our reporters were there, and all of a sudden, everybody's race and everything didn't matter. Everybody was hiding and protecting each other just the same.
Yes.
And the people who were viewing the reporters as, you know, stereotypical white people reporting, and the stereotypical white reporter going, look at the Black people that are angry in the streets. All of a sudden, that all disappeared. And they started talking as humans. And so I brought them into the studio, and we spent several hours together. And I found a lot in common with the people that were marchers. However, I found that they were not in line, per se, with the organizers of Black Lives Matter, the communists that want to, you know, destroy America and have a separate state. And I'm not saying that all of them are like that by any stretch of the imagination, but the ones that have put the manifestos out are not the same as many of the people who follow them that have real issues that nobody's listening to.
Yeah, I will say that the folks that I know who went to Ferguson will say the same thing. There are the actual folks who began to protest because there was actually a systemic injustice in Ferguson that the Department of Justice found, that there is actually systemic racism, that the police were a collections agency policing the population via tickets, and that the police violence was a part of that. And then there is the takeover of that narrative that those in Ferguson are very upset about. And in terms of whether its roots are communism, wanting to destroy America from within, I'm not sure about that narrative.
Well, I would just say, just so I'm not defending or throwing out a paper tiger here. And I don't even remember now, Stu, maybe you can help me define it, but it was a Black Lives Matter manifesto that had been put out very early when Black Lives Matter first started from what, you know, self-appointed leadership. So I want to make clear that that's what I'm defining as the leadership. Okay. So I could be, you might know something different, and I'm willing to explore that.
Well, let me just say that from my knowledge, Black Lives Matter was started just as a hashtag, man, by three queer black women from Florida. And it was just like, and it actually began around the Trayvon case when George Zimmerman got exonerated. And so there's Black Lives Matter, the organization, and then there's Black Lives Matter, the hashtag, man.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the far, far right wing media has whipped up some kind of fever dream about Black Lives Matter. Because when I actually talk to the people in it, these ain't terrorists. They're basically nerds, man. They're like social justice warrior kids. Like seriously.
No, we found the same thing. I got a lot of heat from the right when I wrote an article in the New York Times saying, you know, make sure you understand who Black Lives Matter is, because there's this radical side of it that, you know, hate all cops and, you know, death to the pigs and everything else. But that's not who I've met in Black Lives Matter. And because there's a lot of people that just say there's injustice here and we need to talk about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And like, for example, I saw like when Bill O'Reilly was still on, they kept replaying that marching chant, pigs in a blanket, fry like bacon. I remember when they kept replaying that. And I said, well, which is more deadly, a slogan or a bullet? Because as far as you can tell me, no actual card-carrying member of Black Lives Matter has laid anybody down. They haven't killed anybody yet. But, like, if you compare the body counts, there's no comparison.
But Theo, you wouldn't, you know, you could say that about, people who would protest, you know, who are neo-Nazis here in America that say, hey, you know, death to, and they haven't done, and, you know, their group hasn't done anything. It's still not good to be saying those things or believing those things.
Well, yeah, and those chants right there, I can see how that can trigger some folks into believing that this is a hate movement. But here's what I think is beneath all of this, man. When you look at the idea, I don't know if you studied this, something called historical trauma. It's the mechanism of environmental learning, that you don't just learn language from your parents, you also learn paradigms, and that there are wounds on both sides of the racial divide that distort our lens on how we perceive the world.
Yes.
And if you're not aware of that lens, let's say that the pain lens that black folks have involves victimization. We have been victims. Slavery is not a victim narrative. It's an actual victim thing that happened, right? And Jim Crow is not that either. And on the other side of the racial divide, the lens of guilt and emotional distortion that happens in the hearts of white folks because of the historical crimes, when something is said and you don't realize that you have that filter, it can go through that lens and like all light distort, and you will lose the true shape of the problem if you're not aware that you have that lens. And I believe that that emotional trauma that's been passed down from generation to generation is distorting any efforts to come together. And the difference is that on the white side, I mean, you have very, very powerful people. There is no black answer to Steve Bannon. There is no black answer to somebody like Rob Mercer. There is nobody who has the power that Donald Trump has. So we're dealing with this, and the fact that we're numerical minorities.
Okay, can we
black folks have the right to be afraid?
I need to take a break. Can you stay with us for a minute?
I definitely can.
Yeah, okay.
I plan to stay with y'all the whole time.
Good. All right. Hold on just a second. Back with more in a minute. If you want to protect your home this holiday season, there is a really easy way. It is SimpliSafe. Their Black Friday sale, and it's the biggest one they've ever had. $200 off SimpliSafe's holiday security system. This is their bestseller. You won't believe the price when you see it. $200 off is huge. 13-piece arsenal that covers your whole home. If you want to protect your family, this is the way to do it. There's nobody who comes to your house. There's no hard wiring or anything. You barely lift a finger. You can order it online. It's delivered right to your door. It takes less than a half hour or an hour to set up. And SimpliSafe has no long-term contract. Price, honest and fair, $15 a month. For best-in-industry 24/7 alarm monitoring. That's three times less than everybody else. Don't miss the chance to save $200 during their special pre-holiday sale. You visit SimpliSafeBeck.com. Check it out before it disappears on November 13th. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com. $200 off. Sale ends the 13th of this month. SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck.
So Theo Wilson is with us. He did a TED Talk, Black Man Goes Undercover in the Alt-Right. It's really a must watch. He says human beings all want the same things, and we have to go through each other to get these things. We need to have courageous conversations. They're the way the bridges are built. It's time we start seeing people as people and not simply the ideas that we project onto them or react to. Human beings are not barriers, but the gateways to the very things that we want. This is a collective and conscious evolution. My journey began with a very popular cell phone video and a fallen friend. Your journey begins right now. Join the renaissance in human connection. So, Theo, I've only got about 30 seconds left, but I want to take a break, and I want to come back and try it again, because I think we've found some areas of agreement, but I'd like to see if we can find a path to each other to be able to really have meaningful conversations in the future. Because if not, I mean, I know you're smart enough to look at the world. We're going to start killing each other soon. We already are.
Yeah.
And we got to stop it. So if you will hang on for another 3 minutes, we'll come back and see if we can find more roads towards each other. Good?
Thank you, Glenn.
You bet. Theo Wilson. I think he's the first time we've ever had a slam poet on.
I'm not even comfortable with you saying that
slam
term.
Poet.
It actually makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too, because I don't really know what a slam poet is. But he's the first.
There we go.
And glad to have him.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck Program.
Talking to Theo E.J. Wilson, he did a TED Talk called A Black Man Goes Undercover in the Alt-Right. It's really interesting, and he's with us now.
Theo, let me say something that I think is risky for me to say to my own audience, because it's kind of a heavy idea and requires some real, you know, a lot of talk around it. But I think you'll get it quickly. In viewing the history of America and in viewing where we are now, I believe that Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, the blood that was lost, especially if you read many of his words where he's talking about if all the treasure needs to be piled up and every drop of blood needs to be paid with a life, then that's what we have to do. And I believe that we started to atone for the spiritual wounds on both sides, black and white, for slavery. But then we never sealed that deal spiritually. We never then had a good conversation about it and forgave each other on everything, or, you know, whites didn't ask for the forgiveness of slavery as a nation. Then we went right into Reconstruction, Jim Crow. We had, you know, everything all the way to the civil rights movement, which I don't think we as a nation atoned for or got together with Martin Luther King. We started down that road, and just like Abraham Lincoln, he was shot. And I think a lot of people at that point went, okay, it's better. We're not like that. Let's move on. But we've never had the come together conversation and say, okay, this is what we did wrong. This is where it fell apart. This is what we did as a nation. And many white people are afraid of that because of people that appear to be either a shakedown artist, you know, you want something in return, or have a different agenda. How do we get to a place to where we can have honest conversations, real healing, deep spiritual conversations, and come together without an agenda other than we just want to come together and be decent human beings to each other?
Got you. I think that's a profound question, Glenn. Governor George Wallace, before he became who he was, in the eyes of history, worked as an organizer trying to unite blacks and whites who were poor and had more in common with each other than they did with the ruling class, similar to Bacon's Rebellion, right?
Wait, what? And George Wallace did this?
Long time ago, early on. Yes, he did.
Okay.
And what happened was this. The whites did not want to come together with the blacks, who were open to it because of the fear of commingling. And that once you live with each other, you get to talking to each other. And once you get to talking to each other, you might find each other attractive. And on the very end of that comes, you know, what comes naturally to human beings.
Yeah.
And that I think that the fear of genetic annihilation is beneath all of the reasons why at least the white side won't talk. Black folks.
Well, hang on just a second. I think you're right if you're talking about the extreme right and the alt-right, because I mean, they're chanting that kind of stuff, you know, Jews are going to become us and whatever. But I don't think the average white person is where, you know, we're not worried about commingling. I mean, I just don't think that's happening in the bulk of the population.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, also keep in mind when, you know, this statement was made. And what I think that what we've seen is that we have to ask ourselves this question. It was asked in the Mahabharata, Indian spiritual text, and I think that it's profound. When is peace not peace? And Arjuna answered, when it is tyranny. When it is tyranny. And that there has been a silent tyranny of the white majority suffered by the minorities of this country that they have not had the reason to even feel. Why would you feel it? This, everybody born is trying to make it. White, black, brown, Arab, you name it. And so if you're focused on the things that are just, you know, in your daily life, what would give you the latitude to even entertain the pains of black and brown people? And so what we're dealing with is these constant messengers being sent from our midst, from Medgar Evers to Dr. King himself, and in his latter years, even Malcolm X. And you begin to see that there has been this call to come together, and that has been consistently answered with death. And so we are traumatized by that. And what I'm seeing in the backlash of these police shootings is the reopening of a wound in the black community that will not be silenced by this new generation. We don't understand. And this was the thing that scared me the most.
Go ahead. Yeah. You know, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, this was the thing that opened my eyes the most and seared my soul the deepest about the alt-right when I was undercover. How did, after a civil rights movement that you mentioned, how did, after, you know, having Michael Jordan on everybody's wall and, you know, Cosby before this craziness happened, being America's dad, and, you know, how did this reemerge? When we were in Jim Crow, it was logical to assume that if you didn't see your uncles hanging black folks, if you didn't see your daddy lynching black folks, then you wouldn't have that mentality. And it baffles me how it came back. How did it return after, and a black president, right? You know what I mean? And, you know, he was an imperfect man. I ain't here to defend everything Obama did. I have issues with Obama. But with all of these representations, how did it resurge? And that, to me, is probably the most damning thing about what I've seen, despite the urges to come together.
Okay, so we're gonna. Can we continue a conversation and agree to just let's just put the cards out on the table and
like you're right, you would have permission slip for every question.
No,
you're
I just no, I really would like to have this conversation, but I don't want it to get nasty. You know what I mean?
I won't get nasty. I'm going to stay here and I'm just, you know,
because I think we're having,
I'm not there.
I'm understanding you and I hope you're understanding me, and I think we're on the right track here. I think that there were, I think the average American, the average white American, at least my age and below, I can't speak for those who lived through the 1960s and remember Dr. King and everything else. I grew up in Seattle, and I know that regionally it's very different. You know, people who grew up in the South are much different than, you know, those who, you know, grew up in the Pacific Northwest. But the Americans that I hang out with, and I know that racism exists. I've seen it. They don't have the same kind of thoughts that, you know, America had in the 1960s. Many of us were just kind of past it. And we felt as though when the left started under Obama, we felt as though, okay, now you're going to pay, and
now you're going to pay. Now you're going to pay.
Yeah, it felt like there was, and I'm not necessarily saying this with President Obama, but with people that somehow or another, if you were white or if you were conservative, all of a sudden, the tables were flipped, and we'll show you what it's like. And
oh, wow.
And that's the way I think some people felt. Right or wrong, I think that's the way some people felt. And it was like, wait, but I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem. And they felt like, well, yes, and we're being told this all the time. Yes, you're white, so you automatically are racist. Well, no, wait, I'm human. So, yes, I have a propensity of racism, et cetera, but so does everybody else. Let's talk about racism as a human disease, not a white disease. I felt like we were being pulled back into it's a white or a black thing. It's not. It's a human thing.
I definitely understand where you're coming from on that, because in certain instances, if you looked at the optics, why wouldn't you feel that way? But I can tell you from the black community's perspective that scarcely have we ever more believed in America and unity than when the election of Barack Obama took place. I'm going to tell you right now that when you talk about who was most ready for post-racial America, it was black folks. We were more than ready. We the urge for revenge, the urge for any kind of retribution, was at its lowest when he got elected in our community. This is what I'm talking about.
See, this is great. And I would say, at least in my friend circle, I can't speak for America. My friend circle, while I was disagree with all of his policies, I'm a conservative constitutionalist, so I disagreed with all of his policies. But I remember going on the air saying, you know, the day of the election, this is a great day for America. We have buried the past. We have a chance now to say it's over. And I just feel like we failed colossally on both sides.
Well, let's if I could do a chronology of what got black folks' ire up. Number one, it was the way that the Tea Party treated him. When we saw pictures from the Tea Party rallies that had him painted as a monkey, when we had him, when people were making pictures of him in blackface, we were taken aback by that.
Okay, wait, before you go on. Anything that I was involved in, I never saw that, and I would have called that out. And I think most of the Tea Party, at least the ones that I was involved in, we would have called that out in a second.
It's similar to the point I think you were making earlier, Theo, about how people sometimes see Black Lives Matter, where they'll see the worst actors among a certain group.
You're chanting, death to the pigs, and we're like, what?
Right. And I think part of what you talked about in your TED Talk kind of talks about that in a broad sense, in that, like, if you identify your enemies by the worst among them, and you identify yourself only by your
we're in trouble.
It's tough to ever get past anything.
So what was the second you said? And the second thing was?
The second thing was Trayvon, without question. When we said, because here was the hope in a black president. The hope in a black president was the hope that all black people have had since we were emancipated and before, that we would have some kind of equal protection under the law.
Yes.
And that all we want is for justice to be done, and done institutionally, so that we can relax. And the way that we saw Zimmerman behave afterward, we knew that this guy was a madman. The way that we saw white America rally around him and use the worst parts of Trayvon to justify the killing as if George Bush himself wasn't a wayward youth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then it was like, it's triggered enough this. If you can imagine, like, I just want to flip the script really quickly. Because if you were outnumbered 7-1 by black people in a nation where you were historically enslaved, if you had memos issued from the FBI that, let's say, flip it, because the FBI memo said that there was mass infiltration of white folks who were racist into the police forces. So if you were outnumbered 7-1, had seen that Black Lives Matter was infiltrating police forces all across the country, would you feel safe? And then on top of that, see that there was the same echoes of Emmett Till, your version of it, right? So, if all that happened, you would be up in arms.
Theo, I hate to cut. I'm so sorry. I'm up against a network break. Would you come on with us again and continue this conversation? We could pick it up from there. I would love to continue this conversation with you.
No problem. We'll schedule time and make it happen.
Okay. Right? Theo, thank you so much. Theo E.J. Wilson from Ted Plot Talks, Black Man Goes Undercover in the Alt-Right. Number of Americans preparing for emergencies has soared recently, and this is really a good thing. Take a moment on how to reflect on, you know, the best time to prepare for things are when you are calm. Preparedness and being more self-reliant is a journey. If you have not taken that most important first step, today is the day. And My Patriot Supply has helped Americans prepare for emergencies for 10 years now. They are the ones who have helped my family prepare. So start with your 102-serving food kit right now for $99. 99 bucks, that's less than a dollar per meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Call 800-271-63 or order the kit online, preparewithglenn.com. Ship free to your home. Includes breakfast, lunch, and dinners, last up to 25 years. When a crisis strikes your neighborhood or your family, you'll be glad you acted today. 800-271-63 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
You know, I don't even know how that went. I really don't know how that went. And I would like to continue that conversation with him. But it was a challenging conversation because it's out of your comfort zone. And, you know, I believe that at least once a week, you have to get out of your comfort zone. If we're going to solve this, we have to be uncomfortable with some of the conversations that we're having, or we're never going to grow out of this.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Finally, some sleep. Stephen hadn't had much of it in the last few days. He was just about to doze off, and his daughter frantically ran into his room. She said, Dad, gunshots. He got up and calmly walked to his safe and pulled out his rifle. He counted the shots he heard as he loaded his gun. Time was slipping away. His daughter had told him that they were coming from the nearby church. He knew the people that went to that church, and as he was counting those gunshots, he knew each one of those shots represented somebody that was either hurt or dead. Stephen quickly, without even putting his shoes on, ran out the front and confronted the man with a black tactical gear. The moment, he said, was surreal. He said it almost felt like a video game. He rushed for cover behind a pickup truck, lifted his rifle, and pulled the trigger. He hit him. Shot didn't kill the attacker, far from it. He was able to make it to his car. The gunfire suddenly turned into a high-speed chase. Stephen thought to himself, is this even real life? He was afraid for himself. He was afraid for his family. He was afraid what they were going to find in that church. Stephen and another man, Johnny, got into the pickup truck and chased him down 539. They were chasing this maniac down the highway, 95 miles an hour, weaving in and out of traffic. The whole time, the police were on the phone with Stephen. That's when the attacker ran into a ditch. Police were just seconds behind. Today, Stephen is being hailed and applauded as a hero. He is the same kind of guy of everybody I think a hero is. He says exactly the same thing. I'm not a hero. I'm not. I think my God, my Lord, protected me and gave me the skills to do what I needed to do when it needed to be done. I just wish I could have gotten there faster. I read that quote and I thought to myself, somebody shared a quote with me from some highfalutin Greek when I was at church a few months ago. And butchering it horribly, the quote is, man doesn't rise to the level of his expectations. He rises to the level of his knowledge and training. Stephen's right. He had the skills, and he was in the right place at the right time, and then he just did it. Stephen, thank you for being there when you did. Thank you for all of the times that you trained. Thank you for all of the times that you did the things that you enjoyed. Thank you for the work at the NRA. He's an NRA instructor, by the way. Isn't that ironic? The group everybody says is the worst in the world actually stopped the biggest mass church shooting in American history. Stephen, it is people, Americans just like you, that make all the difference. You never know when you're going to be called to do something great. It may be today, it may be years down the road, but you will not rise to the occasion unless you have knowledge and you have prepared for it.
It's Tuesday, November 7th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Stu, what is going on with the Rand Paul thing?
It's a weird freaking story.
This is,
man,
weird.
I don't know. I mean, I get that sense, and I think maybe it's this other doctor who I'm putting into this role, but it's like, it's almost how I felt at the first couple of hours after Tiger Woods crashed his car at the end of the driveway. We were all like, how do you crash a car at the end of the driveway? What's going on with that story? And it was kind of just nothing big. And then it sort of started becoming bigger and bigger and bigger and stranger and stranger and stranger as it unfolded. And I'm certainly not accusing Rand Paul of anything like that. Maybe the other doctor has some weird thing going on in his life. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so do I have this right? Because when I first heard this story, he was attacked mowing the lawn and got the wind knocked out of him. No injuries.
He was fine.
Yeah, he was fine. It was no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Then I heard that he had some bruised ribs. Then I heard that he had 5 broken ribs.
Mm-hmm.
Then
it was bruised lungs.
Then it was 5 broken ribs, bruised lungs, a partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah.
Now it is 5 broken ribs, 3 teeth that were knocked out, and they thought for a while he had broken his jaw. He may have broken his jaw. They don't know.
Now, what the hell is... That's so weird, and he may not be back in the Senate for a while. And again, like, this is minor when you're talking about an assault, obviously, but, I mean, is he going to be there to vote on tax reform? Is he going to be... I mean, who knows?
And he was charged with 4th-degree assault. I don't know. 5 crack ribs. What, I mean, what do you have to do to graduate to 3rd?
All of the ribs?
Seriously, 4th-degree assault?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, and it's funny because it's also peculiar, not only because of the way this guy is reacting, the other doctor that lives next door to Rand Paul, because he's saying, oh, it's no big deal.
Here it is. The unfortunate occurrence of November 3rd has absolutely nothing to do with either's politics or political agendas. It was just a very regrettable dispute between 2 neighbors over a matter of what most people would regard as trivial. We sincerely hope that Senator Paul is doing well and these 2 gentlemen can get back to being neighbors as quickly as possible.
Gentlemen is the right word. And now there's a motivation there that makes sense. If this doctor, who is a hardcore leftist, occupied Democrats type of guy.
Yes.
If he attacked Rand Paul because he didn't like Trump and he didn't like what Rand Paul was doing in the Senate, it is a federal crime. So it is in his interest to say, oh, it was just about grass clippings. Now, they've been showing the houses on TV. They're really far away from each other. It's hard to imagine why they would care about someone else mowing their lawn and grass clippings blowing, I guess, across the property lines.
Come on.
It doesn't seem plausible, but okay. I mean, those things.
But again,
you've had crazy disagreements with your neighbors before.
Yes.
And you've handled them in crazy ways.
No, I did. What are you talking about?
No, it's just odd that in Connecticut, there would be a bamboo sprout.
I don't know what you're even.
I just thought weird.
It was weird. Okay. All right. Now, listen, this was not if you were a longtime listener of my program, you know that there was a time that I had a dispute with my neighbor because they didn't like a stone wall that I was building around my house.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone on my street had a stone wall.
But you didn't.
But I didn't.
And they didn't want you to have
one. And I needed one.
Even though you owned the property.
And they hated me. Mm-hmm. They hated me because I was, we had a kind of a woods between us. They lived on the other side of the block, and we had woods where I owned like 2 acres, and they owned 2 acres of this wood in the back. And I,
you're actually more irrational than the Rand Paul story. I want to make sure this is understood by the audience.
So I cut down some trees that were dead, and the only time I ever spoke to this neighbor is I didn't. My wife did. She knocked on the door. It's right after we first moved in. And she said, "We don't like what's going on here." That's what she said when my wife opened the door.
It's a nice way to open up a conversation.
And my wife said, I'm sorry, pardon me? She said, "I am your neighbor behind it. We do not like what's going on." And she said, "Again, I'm sorry. What's going on?" She said, "You are cutting down trees." And she said, "Oh, no, we're just cutting down the dead trees." She said, "Well, I don't know where you're from, but here we like nature to take care of itself." And my wife said, "Well, on our side of the property, we like to help it along."
you should have tackled her on her lawnmower.
Yeah. So she closed the door. So then she started, they started with the fence and everything else. And somehow or another, and I don't know how, but somehow or another, bamboo mm-hmm. found itself there right in the middle of the property. It started on my side, apparently.
Hmm.
But once you get bamboo growing, it just doesn't stop.
So not a good thing for them or for you.
Or for me. I wasn't happy about bamboo. Who wants bamboo? It's, you know what bamboo does?
No.
Bamboo
what does it do?
Spreads like crazy, grows and grows and grows. And eventually, that whole wooded area, nothing but bamboo.
Really?
It's crazy.
That's terrible news.
It's terrible news. So, don't know how that happened.
Separate from that conversation, it's not exactly nuts to say that grass clippings could cause an assault. Like, it's not exactly nuts.
Well, if you don't know where you can buy bamboo.
Probably.
Just saying.
You know you're on the air, right? I just want to make sure.
I'm sorry, what? Some of the names and the story details, of course, have been changed.
Well, it's a show. It's entertainment product, really.
This is a show. Mm-hmm. And don't think past that. This is a show.
Isn't it weird, though, that we haven't seen more from Rand Paul as far as going after this guy a little bit or being... I mean, maybe he's just trying to protect. I don't want to get in another fight with my neighbor. But it's like, if this guy is a hardcore leftist that is coming out and attacking you potentially because of your politics, this is something we should probably know about.
Senior advisor to Paul said Senator Paul has 5 rib fractures, 3 displaced fractures. This type of injury is caused by high velocity, severe force. It's not clear exactly how soon it will be before he returns to work, as the pain is considerable and as is the difficulty in getting around, including flying. He said the senator's type of injury could lead to life-threatening injuries.
I mean, the only thing I can come up with, and again, I'm reaching here.
They're in the fight club?
No. There was an altercation, and, it's possible the fall goes worse than intended. You know what I mean? Like you're in a pushing battle, right? Like I'm trying to come up with a scenario. You push someone and they take a step back and trip and fall off a cliff, right? Like, you know,
okay, I don't know if they were in Acme Land,
right? That's why I'm making it a cartoon. But like, you didn't necessarily mean to push them off the cliff.
I fell down a flight of stairs once. Okay, do you remember this? I had in my basement. I had a full flight of stairs, hardwood stairs. Started to fall on the first step, rode my back and my rib cage all the way down to the bottom. Ugh. I bruised my ribs.
It's not helping.
5 ribs.
I can't think of excessive. If you remember the documentary Naked Gun, there was a scene at the very end Nordberg was in his wheelchair, just recovered from terrible injuries that he had in an investigation that he had gone with police squad. And he was sitting at the top. At that time, the California Angels Stadium, and Sergeant Frank Drebin, of course, patted him on the back to say, "Hey, welcome back." Unfortunately, that caused Nordberg's wheelchair to go down the stairs and cause him to flip over the edge of the balcony in the upper deck.
What
and
happened to
hurt.
Him?
He actually wound up murdering his wife and another guy. It was terrible.
Wait a minute. It's
a terrible, terrible tragedy outside of a restaurant. Huh. But that's a long story.
Wow, okay. That took a turn that I didn't expect. Casper has outdone themselves again. Tanya and I were one of the first to have the new Wave mattress from Casper, and we love it. They have collected 3 years of data, feedback, foam research, sleep science, and they created the Wave. It features patent-pending support system that mirrors the curvature of your body for a deeper, more restorative sleep. The Casper Wave, new top layer, incredibly soft, doesn't get in the way of experiencing the support underneath. And like the original, the Wave is designed breathable so you can sleep cool year round. I hate foam mattresses. I hate them because they are about 5,000 degrees. That is not the case with the Casper. And the Casper Wave has this new breakthrough of this the way they've designed it, so it fits the curve of your body, and it's designed for people who have, you know, pain in their hips, pain in their knees, pain in their shoulders. So if you want a great night's sleep, try it in your own home for 100 nights risk-free, free shipping, free returns. Just go to casper.com, use the promo code Beck. You could save yourself $75 off the purchase. That's casper.com, promo code Beck. Minimum purchase is required. See site for details. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
We have a great show at 5 o'clock for you tonight. I want to lay out on a chalkboard something that I don't think anybody is... I mean, are you hearing, Stu? Am I just missing it, all the talk about what's happening in Saudi Arabia?
No, I think it's pretty much being ignored.
I mean, this is... Would you agree? Am I reading this wrong? This is huge.
Saudi Arabia said Lebanon declared war against them.
And they also said it was an act of war... to shoot the missile, and we know they've used the act of war twice. They've used that phrase twice in the last 24 hours, and they are tying this all to Iran. They are basically saying we're going to go to war with Iran. This isn't good, and we have supported Iran. Iran pretty much runs Iraq right now. And is really strong in Syria. They've made this crescent shape. We went over this about a year ago, and said, look, this is the way things look like they're going to shape out, and we can't let that happen.
Right.
And we've let that happen. And so now you have Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Iran. Those are the three powers. And Turkey and Iran want a caliphate. And I think Iran's going to get one. And remember, these are the people of the 12th Imam. You know, all they needed was
a Babylon, if they could have a straight line access to Babylon, they already built their roads to the border. They believe they're fulfilling end time prophecy. And meanwhile, the biggest war game Israel has ever done is underway as well. And because of all of this unrest, we're not paying attention. We are not paying attention. There's really bad stuff coming our way.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem that way. And it doesn't seem like there's much attention on it at all. I mean, I think, you know, anything that happens overseas is boring to Americans. Let's be honest about it.
This should not be. I mean, this is, you know, I think a lot of this is end times kind of stuff, you know, could be viewed that way. And people need to understand it. This is the caliphate. This is the future.
And even on a smaller level, it's your fuel prices. I mean, when you're filling your car up, if this thing, you know, shakes into an all-out war and Saudi Arabia is involved in it, there is, I mean, luckily, the Obama administration was not able to completely stop fracking in this country, like many on the left want to, and that does give us a shield long-term, but it's not instant, and we could see huge spikes in energy prices that we have to all deal with.
Luckily, because they couldn't shut down fracking, we will not be held hostage by the Middle East, which is a new development. But, you know, this is going to be a real shakeout. I mean, if the Middle East goes, you're going to see this is a replay of World War II, man. It really is. Look at what's happening. Japan, China, and Korea, all in flames, separate and unrelated, right? All in flames. That's exactly what was happening in World War II. Meanwhile, Europe and Africa all in flames. This is a rerun of World War II, and we're watching it. And are we paying attention?
I mean, no, obviously, right? I mean, there are other big issues that have happened, right? And you can understand how a mass shooting or something like that would take precedence over coverage of that, though it should be part of the conversation, I think. And it will be tonight at 5 p.m., I know, on The Blaze, when you're going to be doing a big kind of explanation on this. And it's something that you need to know before this goes down. Who are the players here and how does this work? And you can kind of see it really easily illustrated on the chalkboard without having to remember lots of names with dashes in them.
Yeah.
Is a challenge of talking about it, honestly. I think a lot of people, these players are so unfamiliar that it's really difficult for people to kind of get their arms around.
Well, because there's so many things going on, and there's a coup going on as well. There's a coup in Saudi Arabia, and the next king is just liquidating people, it appears. It's quite amazing, and we'll cover it all tonight at 5 o'clock.
Glenn Beck. Listening to the Glenn Beck program.
Welcome to the program, Mr. Pat Gray.
Yes, that's it. You got it.
Hello, good. Pat. How are you?
I'm good. You?
Well, you don't really care.
You're just asking. That is true. Yeah, I'm just making small talk.
Just making small talk.
I don't care at all.
Thank you.
At all.
You.
You said it again.
Your only observation, if I may, your only observation on the Rand Paul thing is
he mowed his own lawn.
Yes.
I don't care about the ribs. I don't care about the neighbor. I care about the fact that Rand Paul, a U.S. senator, mowed his own lawn.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. Or something's wrong there.
Right.
I don't know what.
Something's a little bit off. Yeah, there you go. There. Now we're getting to the truth, because I said I actually liked that. I thought that was really cool, and you said
I did too. But it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't add up.
Why?
U.S. senators don't mow their own lawn. It just doesn't happen.
Why not?
It doesn't happen.
Why?
And eye doctors don't mow their own lawn. He's both. So come on now. Come on.
Why? Maybe, maybe he likes to mow his own lawn. It's something.
It's not possible.
It might be something that he enjoys.
Have you guys attempted to talk to him? Is he going to talk to anybody about this?
No, he's not not doing any interviews.
I guess
right
he's
now.
Like really in bad shape right now. They
said he's in a lot of pain. Yeah,
they said potential broken jaw has been reported. I don't know if that's actually
broken jaw
true,
too.
But that would be a big deal if that's
three
true.
Teeth knocked out.
Oh my gosh! So this was more than being tackled.
We were just talking about this, Pat. It's gone from he had the wind knocked out of him to yesterday five ribs. Now it's five ribs, three displaced fractures, possibly a broken jaw, and three teeth knocked out.
Good heavens!
What happened?
Something weird.
That's really weird.
Yeah, this is not.
I mean, that's a brutal attack. That's an assault. The guy should be. That's like felony style, right? Didn't they charge him with a misdemeanor?
Fourth degree assault. Wow. What do you have to do in Kentucky to be first degree?
People in Kentucky are just tough, apparently.
Wow.
There is a possibility that they were fighting over who really owns the still in the backyard.
Well, it is Kentucky.
It is Kentucky. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hatfields and McCoys, they were from Kentucky, were they not?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I don't really know either.
Is he pissed about the GOP tax bill? Did that set him off?
I think that is it. I mean, he's a hardcore leftist.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
And the idea that now it's all about grass clippings seems to be this guy's attempt to avoid federal crime, which because if it's about politics, it's a federal crime. So you can't just assault a senator.
And did he say it was grass clippings?
That's the rumor. It's been a long-standing
feud about what he
does.
Don't
beat the hell out of somebody over grass clippings. I don't believe that.
Now, let me ask you this. How would you think about the morals and the ethics of planting bamboo on a property line?
I don't
know
where you got this story.
I'm not talking about Glenn. Why are you being defensive?
I don't know where he's getting this.
This is a general moral and ethics question. Mm-hmm. If you have a dispute with a neighbor and they don't like the way that you're doing things with your, let's say your dead trees in your backyard.
Okay.
And they make a comment to you, hey, you know what? We would like to have nature take its course. So then maybe you would then plant some bamboo that spreads really
quickly.
Don't
know anybody who did
and
that.
And let nature take its course on their property.
I don't know anybody who did that.
How would you feel about the morals and ethics of that?
I don't know anybody who did
that. Seems a little petty to me.
Petty?
That seems,
What? It would be nature taking its course. I'm just playing devil's advocate
here. I know. I can tell.
It's just letting nature take its course.
Did nature plant the bamboo? Or how did that work?
Could have. I don't know anybody.
Is it indigenous to Connecticut?
It is in that area now.
Is it?
And you'll never, ever be able to get rid of it. Oh, you know, that's a bad thing about bamboo. Once it starts to grow, it just doesn't ever stop.
And you expect that in Thailand, but I don't know if you expect that in New Canaan, Connecticut.
No,
you know.
I'm sure it was a surprise.
And where'd these panda bears come from? What the hell's going on here? The other thing I noticed last night on the TV show that you talked a lot about the thoughts and prayers mocking.
Yes.
I think this is the fulfillment of one of the things you said, that they're just going to lay themselves bare.
Yes.
And they're just going to come out and say it. And that's what they're doing now. They're just openly hostile to people of faith now. And I found it kind of interesting, the number of people and the kind of people that are doing this. Of course, there's news people. But you've also got the Working Families Party, so communists. Mm. Obviously, communists are going to be usually atheists. You've got Keith Olbermann, who's a socialist. Chelsea Handler, who's just despicable. Will Wheaton from Star Trek.
I always hated him. I wanted him sucked out of an airlock
when
he was Wesley.
From Star Trek.
I wanted him. He was obnoxious. He should have been sucked out of
an
airlock.
Instead, he transformed into a higher being. That certainly didn't happen to him in real life. What a miserable piece of crap he's turned out to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that with love, of course, for all pieces of crap.
He apologized.
But did he say he's sorry?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, good.
He did.
Okay, well, that's sort of big of him.
He apologized. He's like, I'm not talking about people with real faith. I'm talking about Paul Ryan, what's essentially his apology.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I
that's
mean,
not a real
still
apology.
Pretty weak.
But, you know, the Hollywood mocking, I love, and some people have noticed that they were taking time out of their busy schedule raping each other to mock and lecture us on God, which I, I appreciate that a great deal.
It means a lot coming from them.
Doesn't it, though?
Doesn't it? It really does.
Well, I think they have a good point. They said no thoughts or prayers. You keep your thoughts and prayers.
Never think. I'm not thinking at all right now.
Well, that's a trend that they've been pointing out for a long time. So no thoughts, no,
no prayers.
And quite honestly, I agree with them. That's why I just did a hashtag.
Oh, hashtags mean
that's
things,
the most important thing you can possibly do.
Hashtag save our children.
Or me neither.
One of those.
The Me Too thing. I think the hashtag worked. If you were to pray for the victims or think about the victims of sexual assault or Harvey Weinstein,
or get involved in some sort of a charity.
No, you don't want to do that.
For the victims.
You don't want to do that.
You don't want to hashtag it. You want to hashtag me too. But my hashtag turned out to be me neither. I was encouraging the me neither hashtag.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I guess nothing's ever, no one's ever been interested.
No.
Basically.
Yeah, that's right.
I joined him on that one.
Really?
It was just Pat and I, but we're like, nobody's ever really, nobody's ever tried. My wife doesn't even try.
Yeah.
I've never even misread it. I mean, it's like, no, they're very clear. No, not interested.
I got sort of confused because I was also on the me neither bandwagon, because then I was hashtag me neither and hashtag me too, because I was I was in me neither.
Yeah.
So me too was in me neither. And it got very confusing to the hashtag audience.
But at least you hashtag.
I did.
That's the important thing.
And
it's
someday,
the hashtag that counts.
And someday, because of our efforts, they may return our children. Which are not our children.
That's right.
But they're other people's children that have probably been slaughtered.
Well, as soon when they find out there's a hashtag, I'm pretty sure they will.
Yeah, they're gonna return them.
Boko Haram was like, look, we were gonna take these kids, and then we realized you guys were hashtagging us, and we gave them back.
That was too much.
They were like, no, thank you. We don't want any of that.
There's a movie to be made there. There
give
really
us your
is.
Thoughts and prayers, but not that.
Not that. No.
Thank you, Pat.
Pat Gray Unleashed, coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. You can also get the podcast every day, as well as the podcast for this program at iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, glennbeck.com, many different places for you to find it.
Can I ask you, we have NBC on here, and they're just doing, fireman, beefcake calendars.
Fireman beefcake calendars?
Yeah.
So they're
firemen.
Firemen without their shirts
firemen
on.
Without their shirts on.
They seem to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and that's me, 5 pounds. My fat just goes between all of those like lines in their chest.
The line? You don't even know what they are?
No,
they're
I don't
abs.
Know.
You don't even know the lines in their chest?
Whatever they are. Mine aren't defined because I have just a line of fat just right.
It's a very thin one that just gets rid of all definition.
All definition.
And also expands into a much larger space.
That I think I was stung by a bee, but I'm not sure.
Oh,
I'm not
swelling.
Sure. Anyway, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is in today's world, imagine doing that on national television with women in lingerie. And they're just holding puppies and all the guys would be standing around going, I'm interested in the puppy.
Oh, yeah. The only person who can do that, of course, is Ellen DeGeneres, who is attracted to women but can ogle them as much as she wants, apparently.
Ogling and making just an object out of men, totally fine. Women, no. No, don't even, no.
You can't even notice.
You noticed my dress? You said I look nice? How dare you? Next thing you know... You're going to be trying to hold the door open for me. I mean, this is, you know why our kids are struggling? Because nothing makes sense. How, you think your head hurts? You at least remember a time when things were consistent. Nothing in their life is consistent. How are they expected to navigate this world and to be happy in this world when there is no solid navigational compass points. I want to talk to you about gold. I've talked about gold for a very long time. And I
That's what I said to one of the guys who, you know, I call from time to time. And Glenn, when are you gonna say that everything's okay? I said, when I see the starfield rolling back my way, when I start to see the world starting to make sense, moving away from global war, printing bogus fiat money, stopping the spending spree that they're on, and when terrorism, you know, starts to die down. When I start to see that stuff, okay. But right now, it's not going that direction. In fact, the world is starting to spin faster now towards chaos. Tonight at 5 o'clock, we're going to spend some time on Saudi Arabia and Iran. I know it's not a sexy thing. Maybe we should get some firemen with their shirts off.
Well, you could. I mean, you were just saying you had really good definition underneath the fat. Maybe you could just do the monologue without your shirt on.
I don't think I want to do that.
Sign up at theblaze.com/TV. See if he does it.
Or see if I don't. It might be worth more if I don't. I'm going to promise you I won't. And anyway, Goldline is a place that I have talked to you about for a very long time. And I buy gold as an insurance policy against financial calamity. I think, and I'm sorry, but I think that the world is going over a cliff and it's getting faster and faster and faster. And if you don't see it, you probably never will see it. But for those of you who do and you haven't called Goldline, just watch the show tonight at 5 o'clock. Let me explain the Middle East. Nobody is talking about this. Saudi Arabia and Iran are about to go to war. I don't think that's going to help. Call Goldline now. They're offering free gift cards and qualified purchases, a year of free storage on IRA purchases. They'll give you a free lapel pin, flag lapel pin, just for calling to learn more. Read their important risk information. See if buying gold is right for you. Call them now at 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-465-3546, or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck.
Did you see that Harvey Weinstein hired former Mossad agents to go after the victims and try to get information from them and figure out who was going to reveal information about him?
Really is an incredible story. Basically, he found out that these big stories about him and sexually assaulting all these women were going to come out in places like the New York Times and others. And so what he did was hire these high-level security firms of former intelligence agents that did all sorts of stuff. Some of the stuff you'd expect, maybe. They were looking for dirt on the people that were accusing him. He was looking for, you know, who were they with? What did they do on social media? What information could they get to use against them? And with a dirtbag like Harvey Weinstein, you'd kind of expect that. But he went way beyond that, spent hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars hiring these intelligence agents to pose as different people from agencies. Like there was one woman who was a former intelligence agent who posed as someone from a venture capital firm in the UK. They created a fake website for the venture capital firm. And then this woman went up and approached Rose McGowan, one of Harvey Weinstein's accusers.
The one who said she was raped.
She was raped. Met with her several times and posed as someone who wanted to do something about sexual assault. There's too much of this stuff going on. We need to, we need to stop this. Tell me your story. Like, who have you talked to about this?
Trying to get her to violate the terms of the agreement and to find out if she had violated it with anybody else.
Right. Then went to other journalists and posed as journalists and said, look, I've got this dirt on Harvey Weinstein. I hear you're working on this same story. Who else have you talked to? And tried to get the information that way. Then they used that information to go and target others to try to find weak points in their lives to try to push back against them. An incredible.
Yeah. One actress said, I got a call from a journalist. It turns out that they were working for this Black Cube. This is a...
That's the former Mossad agent.
Mossad agents. It scared me. I hung up and ended the call because it was suspicious. It scared me because I knew what it meant to be threatened by Harvey. I was in fear of him finding me. That's really... This guy is...
So this is Ronan Farrow's reporting again. He went back and showed the pictures of this woman to several of the people who he suspected they had contacted. They all knew who she was and identified her from different organizations. Oh, that's the woman from the venture capital company. Oh, that's the woman who's the journalist. Like they all knew who she was. And she was the same person going back and getting information from all these people individually. I mean, this guy spent a fortune to keep this story away from you. And he succeeded for over a year. I mean, he actually was able to kill this thing for about a year using these different methods. Eventually, obviously, it did not work out for him. Good. By the way, did I mention he's a big Hillary Clinton supporter? I don't know if anyone knows that.
No, I think Anthony Weiner knows that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Glenn Beck.